62 is our passage this morning. I'm going to read it to you and then open it up for you. And we'll end our time together this morning around the Lord's table. So Mark 10 from verse 32, they were on their way up to Jerusalem with Jesus leading the way, and the disciples were astonished, while those who followed were afraid. Again, he took the 12 aside and told them what was going to happen to them. "We're going up to Jerusalem," he said. "And the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They'll condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him and spit on him, flog him and kill him. And 3 days later, he will rise." Well, then, after hearing all that, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do for us whatever we ask." "What do you want me to do for you?" he asked. And they replied, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory." You don't know what you're asking," Jesus said. "You don't know what you're asking. Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with?" "We can," they answered, "we can." Well, Jesus said, "Oh, you will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they've been prepared." Wow, when the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. So Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. But not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be a slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many." Then they came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving a city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting at the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called to the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you." Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. Well, there's a question that I want to ask you this morning. Can you drink the cup? Can you drink the cup? Mark 10, 32 to 52. There's a remarkable scene in Mark 14 where Jesus is meeting with his disciples. It's the last time before the crucifixion. And it says, "And he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it." But could they really drink the cup? Can you drink the cup that Jesus drank? you have the scriptures open in front of you, Jesus asked James and John in Mark 10:38, "Can you drink the cup that I drink?" And their answer in verse 39 is, "We can. We can." As I think about this passage and I think about this scene, it takes me back to 1999 when I was working as an apprentice vicar in England. That's what they call pastors there in England, vicars. I was an apprentice. And I was working in a little place called Brighton and Hove, and my vicar, his name was Mark, he used to do communion every single week, 52 weeks of the year. It was an 8 a.m. service. And what he used to do, the Anglicans did it, right? He'd ask everybody to come forward and come and drink the cup. There'd be a railing. You'd kneel down. He'd have a goblet or a chalice like that. He'd fill it with wine. And he'd go across the row, You'd have a sip and then he'd wipe it. Have a sip and then wipe it. Have a sip and then wipe it. And then at the end, there'd always be a little bit of a last bit of dregs in the bottom. And he'd, we say in Afrikaans, he'd slick it. He'd like glug it. Sort of dregs down and that's off he would go. For 52 weeks, I had to drink out of that cup. I didn't want to, but I was the apprentice vicar. If I had to ask you to come and kneel and we all drink out of the same cup, would you come? Not a chance. You would not. I'm not sure whether COVID actually killed that practice. But anyway, honestly, would you all drink out of the same cup? You Aussies? You lie. You lie. Okay, maybe the Spanish will. I don't know. Jesus is asking you this morning, can you drink the cup that I drink? Can you drink the cup that I drink? First heading, the kingdom would be delivered on a cross. The kingdom would be delivered on a cross. Well, it's a fairly dramatic scene in verse 32, isn't it? The disciples are on the way to Jerusalem, and Jesus the Messiah is leading the way, and we're told that the disciples were astonished. Those who were following were afraid. You've got this mixture of energy and excitement and fear in the disciples in the crowd. And we ask, why? What's going on here? You see, at this point, as Jesus makes his way towards Jerusalem, there would have been certain Old Testament prophecies that would have been flying around in Jewish sort of minds and hearts. Messianic prophecies like Psalm 2 verse 6, "I've installed my king on Zion upon my holy mountain." Or perhaps the prophecy of Ezekiel 37:22, "And I'll make them one nation in the land on the mountains of Israel, and one king shall be king over them all." See, this is the day. This is the moment. Seize the moment. Carpe diem. This is the day that Jesus, Messiah, goes to Jerusalem and he's going to become king. This is the day when the Jews are going to go to the top of the mountain and the Romans are going to roll over the other side. But you'll notice in verse 32, Jesus takes his disciples aside and he has a convo with them that they weren't expecting. A convo that they didn't like. And to use one of my old favorite words, Jesus is about to have a conversation which was discombobulating for the disciples. Here's the chat. Here's the inside track. Here's the pull aside. Oh, yeah, yeah. We are going to Jerusalem. We are. The Son of Man, though, will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and they will hand him over to the Gentiles. They'll mock him, spit on him, flog him, and kill him. 3 days later, he'll rise. Though you think I'm about to take an earthly throne in Jerusalem, here's the inside track. I'm going to experience the most shameful death on the planet. I'm going to be tried. I'm going to be humiliated. I'm going to be publicly executed. I'm going to be rejected. I'm going to be betrayed. I'm going to be regarded as a common criminal. I'm going to be despised, afflicted, brutally killed. And then I'll rise from the dead. That's what happens. Can you drink this cup? Oh yeah, the kingdom of God was coming in Jerusalem. It was coming. Just not the way the disciples thought it was going to come. The king of the kingdom, he wasn't going to use political power or influence. He wasn't going to use force or violence. He wasn't going to do a coup d'etat. He wasn't going to come with all the pomp and the ceremony and the horses and the chariots, but he would embrace a cross for the liberation, the rescue, and the deliverance of God's people. The kingdom would be delivered on a cross. Can you drink this cup? Can you? Secondly, the kingdom would be delivered in a cup. Now, James and John, they're part of the excited group, aren't they? In verse 35, and they sort of waltz up to Jesus and it's like, hey, Jesus, we want you to do whatever we ask you to do. That's a little bit like when my sons, when they were younger, they'd come up to me and say, Dad, please say yes. Please say yes. You haven't even heard what they're asking for yet. Now, when I was a bit younger, they were a bit younger, that usually meant, say yes, say yes, say yes, because they wanted to go and sleep out with some friends. These days, when they come to me, my three boys, say yes, they normally want to borrow my beautiful beast, which is my Triton. It's my ute. Nothing frightens a Triton except when boys drive it, right? Just a little bit of an aside. In America, men were asked what was the number one thing they would never, ever, ever, ever give away. Number one, they would never give away their utes. Their wives came in at number three. My wife obviously comes in at number one, right, of course. What sort of expression do you think was on Jesus' face when he said, what do you want me to do for you? What do you want me to do for you? Oh, little one of us sit on your right and one of us sit on your left in glory. When you take the kingdom in Jerusalem, when you take the earthly throne, we want to be there, right, left. Now, you've got to understand something. This is not an unreasonable request when you understand that they were part of the inner three, weren't they? They were part of the inner three. They were the sort of the mighty men of Jesus. Do you remember that David had mighty men? He had three of them. Take a look at this. 2 Samuel 23. I'm trying to even those names. These are the names of David's mighty warriors. Forget that name, can't even pronounce it. So-and-so was chief of the three. He raised his spear against 800 men whom he killed in one encounter. You see, James and John were part of the inner three. David was a Davidic king. It makes sense. But Jesus says to them with a penetrating look, he says to them, you don't know what you're asking. Can you drink the cup that I drink, or can you be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with? Boys, can you drink this cup? We can. No, you can't. We can. No, you can't. Sometimes as disciples of Jesus, we can be so confident in what we think we know, what we think we understand from the scriptures, and yet we can speak in such foolishness and ignorance, can't we? I wonder if you and I have this morning have something of the humility to say sometimes, I got it wrong. I spoke foolishly. I spoke unwisely. I spoke impulsively. I thought I knew what I knew, but I actually don't know as I should. Kingdom would be delivered in a cup that only Jesus could drink. Why? Because Job put it like this in Job 21:20. He said, let their own eyes see their destruction. Let them drink the cup of the wrath of the Almighty. Jeremiah 25, This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, said to me. Take from my hand this cup filled with the wine of my wrath and make all the nations to whom I send you drink it. The cross is a cup of inexplicable suffering. It is a cup filled with the Father's wrath on sin. This cup that Jesus would drink in Jerusalem would be drinking the Father's hatred, fury, and anger on sin. I wonder whether you and I understand this morning something of the hatred that God has on human sin. Something of the hatred, the fury, and the anger of God on your sin. Which is why, when we find Jesus in Gethsemane, we find him begging the Father to take the cup away. Abba, Father, he said, everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me. The cup for Jesus in Jerusalem was terrifying. The prospect of drinking the cup of wrath filled him with such fear that in Luke's account it says that Jesus' sweat was as sweats was like drops of blood with the excruciating prospect of what lay ahead. If you've got the passage open in front of you, I wonder if you noticed there was a link between the cup and baptism. In the most common use of the word baptism, baptizo, it means to dip, it means to immerse. You take something and you immerse it in something else. Clothes were dipped or immersed into buckets of dye. So Jesus, the Lamb of God, the Holy One of Israel, he was going to be immersed in the wrath of God. He was going to be immersed in sin's punishment. He was going to be dipped into the fury of God's hatred on sin. So can you drink this cup? Can you? Can you be baptized with this baptism? We can. No, you can't. The Messiah will be baptized into, dipped into, immersed into hell's fury on sin. See, there are various ways in which human beings can save other human beings. We send soldiers off to war. They go to places like Gallipoli and they are killed for the freedom of others. We have a lifesaver that goes into the sea to rescue another human being. We have surgeons that perform life-saving surgery on people who are sick. But no sinner can save a sinner from the wrath of God. No sinner can endure the winepress of God's fury for another. No sinner can drink the cup of fury for another sinner. You see, the cup in Jerusalem was going to be filled to the brim with torture, loneliness, rejection, abandonment, anguish, and grief. It was a cup of bitterness. And Jesus drank it to the dregs. His life crushed. His life squeezed out under the winepress of God's fury. The kingdom would be delivered on a cross. The kingdom would be delivered in a cup. The kingdom would be delivered in a ransom. Historically speaking, one of the greatest ransoms that was ever paid was for a person by the name of Atahualpa. Atahualpa. Atahualpa was the last emperor of the Incas. He was kidnapped, and a ransom for his release had to be paid to the Spanish conquistador, Francisco Pizarro, in 1533. The ransom was a haul full of silver and gold, which in today's value would amount to about $1.5 billion. But historically, the greatest ransom paid was for you, a sinner, an enemy of God, paid by Jesus to the Father, which all the money in the world could not achieve. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. So can you, James and John, Can you give your lives as a ransom for sinners? Answer? No, we can't. Can you drink the cup? No, we can't. Psalm 49:7, no one can redeem the life of another or give to God a ransom for them. The ransom for a life is costly. No payment is ever enough. It's the year 1190. 1190, it's a long time ago. Richard the Lionheart in England was sailing back from the Crusades when bad weather forced him into the unfriendly country and territory of Austria at the time. King Richard the Lionheart decided to travel back to England on foot, so they tried to have some disguises so they wouldn't be seen and sort of sneak their way back as religious pilgrims into England. Unfortunately, their disguises were not enough. While they were passing through Vienna, they were recognized and King Richard was taken captive. And the reason why is because he absolutely insisted on eating roasted chicken for dinner and wearing some of his fancy rings, some disguise. He was put in chains and forced to live as a slave. Now, the Duke of Austria at that time wanted to send King Richard back to England, but he wanted some money for his troubles. So he set what is still today the biggest ransom in modern history. It was around 150,000 francs at the time, which in modern day money is $3.3 billion, and England paid the ransom. Do you think you would be ever worth that higher price to someone? I don't think Australia would think so. Your family might wish to pay it, but you wouldn't be able to pay it, would you? Yet God infinitely paid more than that for every one of us. You see, when we come to Jesus, we weren't particularly strategic to him, were we? We weren't like King Richard. I mean, I guess it makes sense to pay through the nose to get your king back, but you and I aren't kings to God. We were his what? We were his enemies. So if you think dropping billions of dollars for your king is wild, imagine doing that for your enemy. And that's exactly what God did for us. Though we were far less valuable to him, far more antagonistic towards him, God paid the fullness of our ransom price without a second thought. And the price was so much higher than billions and billions of dollars. It cost him himself. His son. That's why Peter says we were redeemed not with gold or silver, but with the precious blood of Christ, the Lamb of God without blemish or spot. Why would God do that? Why would God pay such a price for you? Why would he do that? Why would he take his enemies and transform them into sons and daughters of the living God? Why would he do that? Why would he do that for you? Why would he pay such a price for you? Answer? For God so loved you. Kingdom would be delivered on a cross. The kingdom would be delivered in a cup. The kingdom would be delivered in a ransom. The kingdom, fourthly, would be delivered in joy. I don't know if you've ever thought about this. But if there was no prospect of joy for Jesus, he would never have been able to take the cup. If there was no prospect of joy, Jesus would not have been able to take the cup of wrath from the hand of the Father. Psalm 104 puts it like this: wine that gladdens human hearts, oil to make their faces shine, and the bread that sustains their hearts. I'm sure that many of us know here the type of joy to the heart that maybe a glass of wine can bring. Amen? Not too many of those. I didn't think so. It's Baptist church, right? But if there was no prospect of joy for Jesus, he could not have drunk the cup. Now, if you were listening to the reading and look at the passage, did you see the prospect of joy? Did you see it there? Anybody know where it is? It's tucked away in verse 34. Do you see it? 3 days later, I will rise. Here's a quote from Henry Nouwen. He said, if joys could not be where sorrows are, the cup of wrath would never be drinkable. If there was no prospect of joy at the end of the cross, no prospect of joy at the bottom of the cup, if there was no prospect of joy at the end of the ransom, he couldn't drink the cup. In Luke's version of Jesus in Gethsemane, we find Jesus saying, "Father, if you're willing, take this cup from me, but not my will, but yours be done." And verse 43, an angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. How did the angel of the Lord strengthen Jesus? He strengthened him with joy. The prospect of resurrection and exaltation back with the Father. And we know that because Hebrews 12 tells us, for the joy set what? Before him. Because of the joy set before him, because of the joy at the end of it, he endured the cross, scorned its shame, and he would sit down at the right hand of the Father in glory. There was joy waiting at the end of this cup. He would be raised from the dead in glory. He would be reunited with his Father. He would know that the work of ransom was done, that the sin debt is paid, it's completed, forgiveness is secured, death is defeated, the devil has overcome the devil, the wrath of the Father has been satisfied. It's done. It's done. And we know that because of his resurrection and exaltation. The kingdom would be delivered on a cross, delivered in a cup, delivered in a ransom, delivered in joy. And finally, number five, the kingdom would be delivered in sight. Now, you've got the passage open in front of you, and we've got the story of blind Bartimaeus. And it seems a bit disconnect, doesn't it? It just doesn't seem to connect with what's gone before it. We've got this whole thing of cup and wrath and everything else, and then we've got this miraculous healing of blind Bartimaeus. But what Mark has done, Mark has carefully put this miracle of physical sight as an application for our spiritual sight. And you know there's a connection, because did you notice that Jesus asked James and John the same question he asked Bartimaeus? You see, there's the link. So James and John, what do you want me to do for you? And he asked Bartimaeus exactly the same question. What do you want me to do for you, Bartimaeus? And in verse 51, Bartimaeus, how does he answer? I want to see. Now, of course, blind Bartimaeus wanted to see with his physical eyes, but Mark is using this incredible miracle as a miracle of spiritual sight and application for us. Let me put it this way. When Jesus took the 12 aside and said to them that he was going to Jerusalem and he was going to wear a crown of thorns, what should James and John have asked for? What should they have asked for? Not can we sit at your right and left in glory. They should have asked for, can we sit at your right and left where? At the cross. In other words, they should have asked for spiritual sight. Lord, open our eyes to see, to understand, to comprehend what your cross means for us. Lord, help us to see that your kingdom comes on a cross and a cup in a ransom with joy. Lord, help us to see what it means to deny ourselves, take up our cross, and follow you. What do you want me to do for you? Lord, help us to see, Lord, that in your death and resurrection, that is the consolation of Israel. That is the fulfillment of all the Old Testament prophecies. The death and resurrection of Jesus is the consolation, restoration of Israel. Help us to see, Lord, that only by losing our lives for you do we gain them. Lord, help us to see that suffering comes before glory. Help us to see that your power is manifest in weakness. Help us to see, God, that your foolishness at the cross is wiser than any human wisdom, and your weakness at the cross is stronger than any human strength. Help us to see. Help us to see, Lord, that our cup of suffering will give way to an eternal joy one day. Here's a profound, it is a profound quote by Henry Nouwen. Let me read it to you. Quote, he said, our cup is so often full of pain that joy seems completely unreachable. When we are crushed like grapes, we cannot think of the wine that we will become. The sorrow overwhelms us, makes us throw ourselves on the ground face down and sweat drops of blood. It's then that we need to be reminded that our cup of sorrow is also our cup of joy. And one day, we'll be able to taste the joy as fully as we taste the sorrow. Jesus asks you that question this morning, what do you want me to do for you? How would you answer it? What do you want me to do for you? What do you want me to do for you? Oh dear God, I pray that it will not be the request of James and John that we can sit now in your glory. Lord, I want to see. I want to see. I want to see. I want to see that your kingdom is delivered on a cross. I want to see that your kingdom is delivered in a cup. I want to see that your kingdom is delivered by a ransom. I want to see that there is a joy at the end of the cup. And I want to see that your kingdom is delivered by a gift of sight. What do you want me to do for you? I'm going to ask the gathering team to lead us in our final song, and then I'm going to ask you that question again. Can you drink the cup? Can you drink the cup? I'm actually going to ask you to remain seated.